Bartain Washington wishing you will have a great weekend.
This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. There has been no let-up in hostilities in Ukraine despite a high-profile prisoner swap. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports.
Fighting continued in Ukraine despite a recent prisoner swap hours earlier and the day after Russian President Vladimir Putin called up reserve troops to supplement his forces. Russian and Ukrainian forces exchanged missile and artillery fire that killed several people in the east of Ukraine. Neither side was ready to concede any ground, even though Moscow has seen military setbacks in recent days. Russian missile strikes in the southern city of Zaporizhia killed at least one person. Meanwhile, authorities in the separatist-controlled city of Donetsk said Ukrainian shelling killed several people after artillery hit a covered market and a passenger minibus. Speaking on Russian TV, a local Donetsk resident accused the Ukrainian nationalist movement of striking the area. These are Bandera supporters. Dear Vladimir Putin, squeeze them out of here from Donbass. I'm Karen Chamas.
Pro-Moscow authorities in Ukraine's Russian-controlled regions are preparing to hold referendums starting Friday on becoming part of Russia, which then could allow Moscow to escalate the war in defense of the annexed territory. The votes are planned in Luhansk, Kherson, Zaporizhia, and Donetsk. Although Ukraine and its Western allies have called them sham referendums and have no plans to recognize the outcome as legitimate. Hurricane Fiona, moving closer to Bermuda after causing several deaths and leaving many people without power in Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic. Fiona is expected to make its closest approach to Bermuda overnight into early Friday with significant impact from winds and storm surge, according to the National Hurricane Center. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Thursday that the United States has allocated more than $170 million in additional humanitarian assistance for ethnic Rohingyas living both inside and outside Myanmar. In a statement, Blinken said the latest assistance package includes more than $93 million administered through the State Department and more than $77 million through the U.S. Agency for International Development. He said the $138 million is for programs specifically for host communities in Bangladesh. Well, nearly 4 to 5 million Americans have rolled up their sleeves for Omicron-targeted boosters. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has the story.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday 4.4 million Americans have received the updated COVID-19 booster shot so far. The White House has its own count, saying by its estimate, more than 5 million people have received the new booster. Either way, health experts say it's too early to predict whether the demand will match the 171 million doses of new boosters ordered by the federal government for the fall. The new boosters are designed to target the most common Omicron strain. There has been a temporary shortage of Moderna vaccine. The issue should be resolved soon as government regulators complete an inspection and batches of the vaccine are cleared for distribution. I'm Mike Rossia.
Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida said Thursday that Japan will abolish a series of COVID-19 booster restrictions in hopes of reviving its tourism industry. As of October 11, Japan will allow individual visitors to enter the country, reinstate visa waivers, and end the cap on daily arrivals. Kishida announced the long-awaited policy shift at a news conference in New York. Japan has also removed mandatory pre-arrival PCR tests for fully vaccinated travelers in September, but kept the 50,000 cap on daily arrivals. The new guidelines will open doors to an unlimited number of tourists as long as they have been vaccinated three times or submit a negative COVID-19 test ahead of their trip, according to Kyoto News. Clashes between Iranian security forces and protesters have killed at least 9 people since the violence erupted over the weekend, according to the Associated Press, based on statements from Iran's state-run and semi-official media. The demonstrations in Iran began as an outpouring of anger over the death last week of a young woman held by the country's morality police for allegedly violating its strictly enforced dress code. As always, for details on more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Today is Friday, September 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, world leaders push for Moscow to be held accountable for human rights violations in Ukraine.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned Russia that plans to annex Ukrainian territory under the guise of referendums in Russian-held areas would violate the UN Charter.
World leaders push for Moscow to be held accountable for human rights violations in Ukraine, and UN rights experts slam the international community for failing to protect the rights of the people of Myanmar.
In his report, UN Special Rapporteur Tom Andrews presented a scorching picture of the military junta's relentless cruelty towards Myanmar's people.
And a report by scientists forecasts the world population to hit 8 million in a few months. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. World leaders at the United Nations on Thursday called for Moscow to be held accountable for human rights violations in Ukraine as Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov defended Moscow's war. Zachary Gorman of Reuters reports.
At a meeting of the United Nations Security Council focused on the bitter and bloody conflict in Ukraine, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned Russia that plans to annex Ukrainian territory under the guise of referendums in Russian-held areas would violate the UN Charter.
Any annexation of a state's territory by another state resulting from a threat or use of force is a violation of the UN Charter and of international law.
Russia said it plans to hold referendums in the upcoming days in parts of Ukraine it seized since the start of its invasion some 7 months ago. Those territories comprise almost 15% of Ukraine. On Wednesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced plans to call up some 300,000 reservists for combat and made a thinly veiled threat to use nuclear weapons to defend the country. Guterres said nuclear threats were unacceptable.
The idea of nuclear conflict, once unthinkable, has become a subject of debate. This, in itself, is totally unacceptable.
Much of the Security Council meeting Thursday focused on alleged atrocities committed in Ukraine.
When I went to Bucha and went behind St. Andrew's Church, the bodies I saw were not fake.
International Criminal Court prosecutor Karim Khan told the council that there were, quote, reasonable grounds to believe crimes within the jurisdiction of the court had been committed in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told the Security Council of a mass grave where victims showed signs of torture.
One site contains some 440 unmarked graves. A number of the bodies unearthed there so far reportedly show signs of torture, including one victim with broken arms and a rope around his neck.
Russia denies committing war crimes as part of what it terms a, quote, special military operation. On Thursday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov defended his country's military actions, claiming that Ukraine, in fact, had sparked the conflict by threatening Russia and repeating Moscow's justifications for sending their forces into their smaller neighbor.
Everything I've said today simply confirms that the decision to conduct the special military operation was inevitable.
Lavrov left after speaking. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba spoke to reporters ahead of the Security Council meeting. When asked about being in the same room as Lavrov, he responded,
"I will keep safe social distance with him."
That's Zachary Gorman of Reuters. Top U.S. officials are calling Russian President Putin's plan to mobilize 300,000 Russian troops to fight in Ukraine a sign of weakness and note Moscow is, quote, struggling, unquote. Experts say Putin's call for reservists could increase opposition inside Russia to the seven-month invasion of Ukraine, while its impact on Russia's effectiveness on the battlefield remains uncertain. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a major escalation in Russia's war on Ukraine, calling for the mobilization of Russian troops for the first time since World War II.
I repeat, we are talking about partial mobilization, that is, only citizens who are currently in the reserve and, above all, those who served in the armed forces and have certain military specialties and relevant experience will be subject to military service.
But Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu made clear that 300,000 Russian reservists will be called up to go to Ukraine. Catholic University's Michael Kimmage tells VOA he finds the announcement startling and that it's unclear what impact the mobilization will have on the outcome of the war.
I think the larger question is whether these new conscripts can be effectively integrated into a fighting force. And even if they can, whether Russia's strategy in Ukraine is really going to yield different results than the ones that it's yielded so far. It's not been a winning strategy, so does it necessarily make a difference to have more soldiers with an ineffective strategy? It's unclear, but the mobilization will surely go forward and may simply be a first step in a much broader war.
Kimmich says with this mobilization, Putin has broken an unwritten contract with the Russian people that they would be largely left out of his military endeavors.
So if you're a 25-year-old man sitting in Moscow or St. Petersburg, a week ago you might have said, the war is somebody else's business. That's a lot less plausible today. And so you can see as a result, some people are trying to get out of the country.
The Russian president also accused the West of nuclear blackmail and said, if the territorial integrity of our country is threatened, we will without question use all the means at our disposal to protect Russia and our people. He added, this is not a bluff. But Bellingcat's Christo Grozev tells VOA he believes Putin-veiled nuclear threat is likely pretense.
Especially at a time of weakness for Putin, officers are likely to disobey such an order because a weak Putin cannot offer them the protection from a future tribunal or for future justice or even from moral justice in case he's not there to protect them in the future. So I think there's a lot of bluffing by Putin that he will use nuclear, but the chance that he will instruct the usage is very low.
Putin's most high-profile rival, imprisoned Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, gave a video statement in a court appearance on Wednesday. He said the partial mobilization will lead to bloodshed and massive tragedies. In Moscow and other cities, protesters took to the streets Wednesday evening to protest Putin's mobilization of reservists. Many were detained by police. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Thank you, Cindy. A human rights expert blasted international community in a report released Thursday for failing to protect and uphold the rights of the people of Myanmar in the face of mass atrocities allegedly committed by the country's military rulers. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Myanmar submitted his report to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In his report, UN Special Rapporteur Tom Andrews presented a scorching picture of the military junta's relentless cruelty towards Myanmar's people. He said conditions have gone from bad to worse since the military launched a disastrous coup last year. He said millions of people are subject to an endless spiral of abuse and violations of their human rights. Andrews cited a list of horrific violations, including the destruction of more than 28,000 homes and the burning of entire villages. He said more than 12,000 people, including hundreds of children, are arbitrarily detained in deplorable conditions. He said the country has been plunged into a state of economic distress.
The Myanmar military is committing war crimes and crimes against humanity on a daily basis, including sexual violence, torture, the deliberate targeting of civilians, and murder.
Myanmar's military government has not responded to the report. Andrews noted the people of Myanmar are deeply disappointed by the response of the international community to this humanitarian crisis, which he says has become a humanitarian catastrophe.
They are frustrated and they are angered by UN member states that are actually working to prop up this illegal and brutal military junta with funding, with trade, with weapons, and with the veneer of legitimacy. But they are also disappointed by those nations that voice support for them, but then fail to back up their words with action.
The report said conflict is spreading throughout the country as more and more civilians take up arms against the junta. Andrews warned escalating conflict between the military and armed ethnic groups could lead to another mass exodus of refugees like that which occurred 5 years ago. Persecution and massive violence against the Rohingya Muslims sent more than 700,000 fleeing for safety to Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, in August 2017. The special rapporteur said the discrimination, repression, and human rights that triggered that exodus persist to this day. Andrew said many people in Myanmar believe the world has forgotten them or simply does not care. He appealed to the UN Human Rights Council to prove them wrong. He urged UN member states to stand with these courageous people who are fighting for their lives, their children, and their future. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, the world's human population is forecast to surpass 8 billion in the coming months. Compared to ants, that is a mediocre milestone. According to the most thorough assessment to date, the global population of ants has hit 20 quadrillion. The study was published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. In comparison, the world's population at 8 billion, it means there are approximately 2.5 million ants for every human. Researchers based the analysis on 489 studies of ant population spanning every continent where ants live. There are more than 12,000 known species of ants. Tropical regions were found to harbor more ants than other areas, with forests and drylands boasting more ants than urban areas. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. UN investigators are accusing the Ethiopian government of committing serious violations in the Tigray region, which could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. The International Commission for Human Rights Experts on Ethiopia submitted its first report Thursday to the UN Human Rights Council. Again, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The three-member commission says widespread horrific acts of violence have been committed since fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province broke out in November 2020. It finds neither the government nor the rebel Tigray People's Liberation Front has clean hands. However, it notes the government is responsible for most of the atrocities documented in the report, adding that some of these crimes are ongoing. The investigators blame the government for the dire humanitarian situation in Tigray. The commission chair, Kari Betty Murungi, said the federal government and its allies have looted and destroyed goods indispensable for the survival of the civilian population. She added these and other tactics have left 90% of the population in desperate need of assistance.
We have reasonable grounds to believe that the widespread denial and obstruction of access to basic services, food, health care, and humanitarian assistance amounts to the crime against humanity of persecution and inhumane acts. We also have reasonable grounds to believe that the federal government is committing the war crime of using starvation as a method of warfare.
Murungi noted the commission also has received information indicating that Tigrayan forces have looted or otherwise misappropriated humanitarian aid. She said there are reasonable grounds to believe the Ethiopian Air Force has committed war crimes, including intentional attacks against civilians and the use of armed drones against civilian targets, causing many civilian deaths and injuries.
The commission also found that rape and crimes of sexual violence have been perpetrated on a staggering scale since the conflict began, with Ethiopian and Eritrean forces and regional militia targeting Tigrayan women and girls with particular violence and brutality. At times, the attackers used dehumanizing language that suggested an intent to destroy Tigrayan ethnicity.
The commission said the Tigrayan forces also have committed serious human rights abuses, some of which amount to war crimes. It accused the forces of large-scale killings of Amhara civilians, rape and sexual violence, and widespread looting and destruction of property. The Ethiopian ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Zenebi Kabidi, said the allegations in the report were unsubstantiated, selective, discriminatory, and politically motivated. He said Ethiopia is committed to peacefully resolving the conflict in Tigray under the auspices of the African Union. He called on members of the Human Rights Council to reject the report and not to extend the mandate of the commission. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A movie portraying an all-female warrior unit that centuries ago defended the West African kingdom of Dahomey which is today the country of Benin, is drawing both praise and criticism. VOA's Penelope Pulu reports the, quote, woman king, unquote, has an all-black and mostly female cast, a first for a major Hollywood motion picture. But some critics note it had little African involvement.
Rarely does Hollywood portray Africa or Africans except through the eyes of outsiders. Not so the woman king. Led by General Naniska, the Agoji warriors, a fearsome women's unit, slay their enemies, European and African slave traders. Academy Award winner Viola Davis says she identifies with her warrior character.
I saw myself within the same way I see my white counterparts. And it wasn't until I went out into the world and the industry that I realized the world and the industry does not see me the same way.
Ready for war!
The Agoji story, many know about it, heard about it, but to see it on screen, it's a different experience.
Bukari Sawadogo, who teaches at City University in New York, notes there is both excitement and criticism surrounding the film.
This is African stories, but in terms of how he was represented and the movie was made, was little active African involvement in the movie, be it in front of a camera, but also behind the camera.
It took 7 years and upwards of $50 million to make The Woman King, which was shot in South Africa. Kathy Schulman, who helped produce the film, says it was an uphill battle getting Hollywood to finance it.
Black Panther opened a certain door, right? The Black Panther said, imagine an African nation with agency. And I said, well, why do we have to imagine it? How about an actual African nation with agency? You know, each one of these things is a step.
Actors trained rigorously for the combat scenes, says Sheila Atim, who co-stars the Agoji warrior Amenza.
We were trying to portray these women who were some of the most extraordinary warriors the world has ever seen. We wanted to do it right.
Noting the Kingdom of Dahomey took part in selling other Africans into slavery, there have been calls to boycott the film. Yet, according to The Hollywood Reporter, the film's opening weekend in the U.S. exceeded expectations, grossing $19 million. Women made up 58% of all ticket buyers, according to post-strike exit polling. Black moviegoers made up 56% of the audience. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
Saturn, according to recent estimates, is about 4.503 billion years old, but its famous rings are only about 100 million years old. Scientists have been trying to find out why those rings are so much younger than the planet itself. A new study published in the journal Science and led by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology suggests that at one time, Saturn had at least one extra moon along with its current stable of 83 moons. Dubbed Chrysalis by the authors, the study proposes that the moon was ripped apart when it grazed its host planet about 160 million years ago. The researchers' findings suggest that it then broke into fragments that may have continued to float in orbit. It's thought that those fragments broke into even smaller icy bits over the years and formed Saturn's iconic rings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. A conversation with American Enterprise Institute fellow Catherine Zimmerman, who focuses on the global Salafi jihadi movement as we mark the 21st anniversary of the September 11th terror attacks on U.S. soil. We talk with Catherine about the ramifications of the recent killing of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri, as well as threats to international security from Afghanistan to Yemen. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Every year, world leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Border Crossings. Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
on Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of all events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to prevent the Iranian regime from acquiring a nuclear weapon. President Joe Biden has repeatedly made that clear. He has also made clear he believes the best way to achieve that goal is through diplomacy. Since April 2021, the United States has engaged in indirect negotiations with Iran with the aim of a mutual return to full implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA. The United States exited the deal under then-President Donald Trump in 2018, and since then, Iran's breakout time to produce enough material for a nuclear weapon, should it choose to do so, has been dramatically reduced from about a year prior to the U.S. exit from the deal to a matter of weeks or less today. In an interview on Al Arabiya, U.S. National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communication John Kirby emphasized that regardless of whether a mutual return to full implementation of the JCPOA is ultimately achieved, the United States is fully prepared to counter Iran's destabilizing activities in the region, which have continued to escalate since the U.S. left the JCPOA in 2018. With or without a nuclear deal, we're going to defend our national security interests, said NSC Coordinator Kirby. We can do that economically with sanctions that still stay in place, and we can do that militarily in terms of defending our people and our facilities. The United States would prefer not to take such steps, said Mr. Kirby. Iran has some decisions it has to make, not just with respect to the nuclear deal on the table, but what kind of future they want to see for themselves going forward in the region. Mr. Kirby noted that Iran's leaders are the ones supporting terrorist networks. They are the ones threatening maritime traffic. They are the ones contributing to destabilization on the political forefront inside the Middle East. And they can make some decisions on their own to stop doing those kinds of things. And they would not face the kind of pressure they're going to get from the United States and other countries, economically and militarily.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.